today. Victoria and Jessica and I went over the entire agenda.
We're recording.
Just couldn't find it.
We can hear from them first in that.
Okay, thank you. We are back in open session, and again, we are on section number 2, item number 17 and 18, 24-114 and 24-115 in regards to Maya Bella Pianta, DBM. Thank you for being here today. I just want to remind you, I know we have several different cases, so let's try, to limit each discussion to the two items before us right now. Okay, so I'll go ahead and let you, you have an opportunity to speak to address the board.
I'm finally feeling better from that bad reaction that I had to the antibiotics and being really sick. So I did go out and get some money paperwork done as soon as I could.
Okay. Is that it? Okay. Ms. Frost, you are the case lead on these.
Ms. Frost.
I'm the star.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. We're both blonde. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. At the February 21st, 2024, Arizona Veterinary Medical Examining Board meeting, the board opened the above-noted investigation for non-compliance with the interim consent agreement, combined cases 22-136 and 2303 regarding Maya Bella Pianta DBM. According to the interim consent agreement with terms and conditions of suspension / probation, paragraph 4A and 4B, Dr. Bella Pianta, you were required to complete monthly therapeutic counseling sessions with quarterly progress reports sent to the board by the approved counselor. The counselor's report was to include addressing the areas outlined in Dr. Keene's, both his original evaluation and his amended evaluation, and those recommendations. And where his recommendations were for any recognized need for other types of frequency of counseling or treatment. You further were required to provide the counselor with a copy of Dr. Keene's evaluation report and the addendum to facilitate the counselor addressing Dr. Keene's findings. Additionally, you failed to notify the board of a change of address within 7 days as required by the interim consent agreement under terms and conditions, suspension / probation, paragraph 11A. Therefore, I move that the respondent has not complied with all of the terms and conditions as set forth in the ICA dated 3/15/23, and the suspension of license. And that as a result, find Dr. Bella Pianta in violation of 32, 22, 32, 18 for unprofessional or dishonorable conduct for violating a written order of the board.
I would just make a minor word adjustment. It's not that you're finding her in violation, but you're going to that's the possible violation that the conduct you just identified violates, if you will, and that'll be decided at an administrative hearing.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. So that's potential violation, and we're finding that she violated Dr. Bella Pianta.
Potentially
violates 32, 22, 32, 18 unprofessional or dishonorable conduct for violating a written order of the board. Anybody want to second that?
I'll second that. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Move on to the next one and then combine them.
Yes, but you may want to see if she has something.
Okay.
You're welcome. So we are on case 24-115 now. If you have anything that you would like to add or share on that case.
That is the one that is currently in appeal, and we are hoping today to ask for a stay for that. And I also, if you need to continue doing it, would like to see a different psychologist.
Could you speak up?
I would like to see a different psychologist if possible. I did go and get what I was hoping would be approved as a evaluation done at Utopia, which has a long program of 12 hours a week as a recovery program, and they also do a psychological and substance abuse evaluation, and I got that done on the 9th. But I guess that's being accepted.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just to mention in the interim consent agreement, and excuse me, this is in the board order, that you approved pre-approval of the evaluator was to be done by the executive director, and that was not done in this case. So that was one area. You were sent a letter by the executive director dated 2/27/2024, which stated at the February 21st, 2024 Arizona Veterinary Medical Examining Board meeting, the board opened the above mentioned investigation for non-compliance of interim order for evaluations for case 2434. According to this interim order, you were required to undergo updated substance abuse and psychological evaluations to ensure you can safely and completely practice. And as I mentioned, that was to be, that the evaluator was to be pre-approved by the executive director. The interim order was effective on November 20th, 2023. The interim order required you to make an appointment with a board-approved healthcare professional within 30 days of the effective date of the interim order, complete the evaluation within 60 days of the effective date of the interim order, and cause the evaluator to send the final evaluation report or reports directly to the board within 90 days after the effective date of the interim order. Because of that, that did not occur, and you were in essence granted some leeway in this process. We are now 2 months past the deadline for it to receive the report.
Ms. Lawler, I'd like to interject. For the evaluation, she did request that Dr. Matthew King be the evaluator, and that was actually part of the order, that he was basically pre-approved.
Right.
So she had started the process to go do that.
Yes.
But then she didn't finish that.
Right. Okay, thank you for the correction. Thank you. Unfortunately, as a result of your noncompliance, I move to find a potential violation of 3222.32.18 unprofessional or dishonorable conduct for violating a written order of the board.
Okay, we have a motion. Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move we consolidate cases 24-114 and 24-115 and move to formal hearing.
Okay.
Second.
Motion and a second to move these two combined cases remand to a formal hearing. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. So now we are moving on.
You can step back.
Are we not going to go? We're going to do the next ones now, so she can just join her.
Okay.
So we're on section number 4, administrative review of previous actions. We are on item number 2, combined cases 22-136 and 23-03 in regards to Maya Bella Pianta, DVM. Monthly appearance is required by consent agreement. Board may review, discuss, and take action on compliance with consent agreement and other information presented and may amend the ICA. Again, Ms. Sullivan, you are the lead.
Yes, I would open the floor to respondent and counsel.
Madam Chair, board members, thank you. I do have some updates that I'd like to just go through before turning it over to Maya to fill in, Dr. Bellapianta to fill in any blanks. These are productive updates today. Dr. Bellapianta has found a counselor who's been approved by Ms. Whitmore, and that counselor was recommended by Dr. Bellapianta's PCP. And the provider is actually at a pretty substantial, they offer substantial programming. It's a place called Recovia, and they offer group therapy, drug testing, counseling as well. And so we do have some pending requests with Ms. Whitmore to take a look at whether the drug testing that's offered through Recovia can be used instead of the other provider so that it just streamlines things. And then also to take a look at whether the group therapy sessions that are offered at this provider's facility are appropriate replacements for the AA. So Ms. Whitmore is looking at that and is going to talk to the counselor that's been identified. The counselor is very ready, willing, able, enthusiastic to write the updates, has asked for Ms. Whitmore to provide some guidance about exactly what would the board like to hear about. So I have good high hopes that this provider is going to provide the information that the board has been looking for under that consent agreement. And I think that those are the only updates we have on this case.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions.
Okay. So no questions. Are we... Okay. So no action on that. then we are on item number 3, 2434. Board may review, discuss, and take action on compliance with interim order for evaluations.
Thank you. I have two major updates on this case, and they kind of move in opposite directions, but I'm just going to take them one at a time. So we understand that the order is effective, and toward compliance, the question today, and Dr. Bellapianta raised this, and I'd like to clarify what the issue is and the request. As Ms. Whitmore mentioned, we did submit Dr. Keene as the evaluator to be approved, and that was at counsel's recommendation because our firm, we used Dr. Keene for the original eval, and so why reinvent the wheel? Dr. Bellapianta took that advice, and that's why we submitted him for approval. Through this process, it has come to light through conversations with counsel that there's a discomfort with using this particular provider and that she had a bad experience with him for reasons that can be brief but would rather not put on the record actually right now. But what I asked the board today and what the question is are we stuck with Dr. Keene or can we submit somebody else for approval? And because it was baked into the interim consent or the interim order for evaluations, to submit someone for approval, get them approved, and then go. And so I am candidly a little confused about how to advise Dr. Bellapianta about whether or not, given her discomfort with this provider, can she identify somebody else at this point? So that's the first question I have.
So she had discomfort with a counselor as well. So we're changing counselors. Yeah. So we're going this cycle of we don't like somebody, so we kick the can further down the road.
Yeah, it's always something every month.
Right.
And that's
what
the short answer to her question is, she can submit the name. There's nothing that prohibits her from submitting another name.
Okay.
But it's, it is what it is.
Understood. And comments well taken. And what I would like, the purpose behind this question is to try to get back on track and to try to get the evaluation moving forward. So thank you. Sounds like we can submit the name, and then whether the board decides they want to approve, Ms. Whitmore wants to approve, remains to be seen. The next issue that I wanted to discuss is that even though we know that the order is effective, Dr. Bellapianta does continue to, we are pursuing the appeal at the Court of Appeals, And those things can happen simultaneously because we believe that even if she does comply with the order and moves forward, that this is one of those interesting legal questions that can evade review and is appropriate for appellate review regardless of whether or not she complies. So we are pursuing that appeal. And I'd like to just give you an update about where we are in that process. So we have, actually today, our case management statement to the Court of Appeals is due, which is basically an outline of what's this all about. And so then they've set a briefing schedule to begin on April 29th, where we have to provide the explanations. Because this is a case where we're challenging the constitutionality of a state regulation that's on the books, we are required under statute to also serve notice of our case to the Senate's president and the Speaker of the House, and also the Attorney General's office. And so we are going to be doing that as well. That's just a statutory mandate we have to follow if we want to do it. And so we also are going to file another request for a stay. And the purpose of this request is to preserve the status quo. Stays are a legal mechanism to just say, can we just push pause while we figure out the legality of what's going on? And so I am going to ask the board to consider stipulating to a stay, again, to preserve the status quo. And the reason that I have the audacity to ask that at this stage is because, at this point, you do have Dr. Bella Pianta in counseling. She is being monitored, so there is no what I would consider a genuine concern that she's going to go off the rails without somebody knowing that that's what's going on. And so putting pause on the evaluation means that the court will tell us, all of us, one way or another, whether or not it gets the green light. And if the court gives the eval order the green light, she has to go do it. And if the court says no, that was not supposed to be issued in the first place, then we have that answer. And so my request comes from a efficiency, resource conservation perspective of if we can push pause and just preserve the status quo until we get that answer, I would request that we do that. So that's the second issue today, is that I wanted to give the update and then ask the board to just consider the effectiveness of stipulating to the stay.
I don't know who would like to.
We can't make a motion that we take no action, so we should probably just take no action.
Well, I think you can,
Pardon?
Yeah, there's a request. You can just, if you're not inclined to stipulate to a stay, you can just make a motion to
deny the request.
Yeah.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to deny their request. There's
no further. I was going to second that. I don't know if somebody did. I didn't hear it.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Yes, because she said so moved. So, okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Thanks. So. Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So, let's see. Where are we at? We've got that. Are there any other items, Victoria? I'm sorry that we need to.
Better time sensitive.
Yeah, wrap up before. Especially if I, because I, again, as a reminder, I have to leave at 3:50 today, and it does not look like we will be finished. So.
If no one else is leaving, then there's nothing else. I was just kind of worried about the minutes. But
if I, five one is 2:30 to 3 o'clock, is that a phone call one? The AABSB.
No, she's here.
That's her. That's the only other one I think I've seen.
She's been patiently waiting. I know, well, she's just been observing. And
watching us in action.
Okay, so let's go ahead then. And we are on section number 5, reports, correspondence, referrals, and other business. We got board may review, discuss, and take action on presentation by Beth Bennett, VMD. She's the chief veterinary officer at the American Association of Veterinary State Boards. And she is here today. She flew in special to give us an update on telehealth. This is such a very popular topic, and I would just like to remind everyone that as tempting as it may be, we are not going to engage in a Q&A, debate, discussion, etc. afterwards. You guys are all welcome to maybe chase down Beth after the meeting is over if you want to, you know, get some more feedback or thoughts. But again, we are happy that you are here, and so I know Dr. James is the lead. Do you have anything you want to add or introduce? Or
I would. The only thing I would add to it is that I don't even know what meeting, what AABSB meeting it was, but we had recently had a conversation about telemed. And the implications of how we're going to handle cases should they come before us, which we suspect at some point in time we will see. And I thought it would be helpful to have somebody who has experience with other boards and how they, what they've been seeing and how they've been handling it and that kind of thing, just to kind of give us at least some groundwork to work off of as we approach these cases. Hopefully never, but let's...
I'll be gone by then, but
you never know.
Okay, thanks. Take it away, Beth.
Thanks for having me. So I flew all the way here to tell you I can't answer your question because there haven't been that many cases. So, you know, I think there's only been one or two, and one or two isn't good to advise the board on. What I can do is walk you through our thought process when we were developing our model regulations. Because we developed them, you have to build regulations to fulfill the statute, correct? So I could talk to you about how we built our model regulations to fulfill our invented statute in the PAM. So we live in a really, I live in a wonderful world where I can create the statute and then build regulations in response to my own creation, which is delightful. So as a tool to help boards that need it. So I want to make that clear. We always have to make it clear. We are not telling you what to do. This is in case a situation like this where you have to develop regulations in response to a statute that allows for the virtual development of PCPR. We created that instance, and then we responded to it. So in the PAM, and actually I think a lot of the things that we did are very similar to what the Arizona legislators did as well. So that's good that there's some overlap. So the first thing that we did was we said we allowed for the virtual practice of VCPR, and that is in section 107 of the PAM. And I sent this in advance, so the file should be named 107. And there we just said the practice, and this is what the legislators are telling us, these imaginary people that we elected. So we said the practice of veterinary technology in this jurisdiction through electronic or technological means, regardless of the location of the practitioner, is the practice of veterinary medicine and veterinary technology. So we are establishing that if you practice telephonically or electronically, you are still practicing veterinary medicine. You are not exempt. And this is, I believe this is what the Arizona legislature said as well. And we said the same thing for technology. What we did, though, is we, and this goes back to the question about how do we regulate this? Because we argued back and forth of, well, what do we do if the practitioner is in Arizona I'm just saying Arizona. What do we do if the practitioner is there in Arizona, but the patient is not, or vice versa? And we decided, screw it. If the practitioner is in Arizona, then they have to be licensed in Arizona. If the patient is in Arizona, they have to be licensed in Arizona. So we kind of said, you know what? Regardless, we have to be able to regulate these licensees that are practicing veterinary medicine. So even if you are working for one of those national companies and you're based in Arizona, but the patient is in another state, California, that allows for virtual VCPR, you are still beholden to Arizona laws and Arizona regulations. And if there is a complaint against you, even if it's against the patient that's in California, you can still be disciplined in Arizona. So we decided to just be redundant and just take the question out of it. And we, I should say that we worked with a number of lawyers on this, and we worked with a number of board members and other paralegal and et cetera, EDs. So that's the one thing that we did. Another thing that we did, and this was in Section 301 of the PAM, is that we said in subsection B, veterinary medicine, veterinary technology shall only be practiced in or from a veterinary facility registered with and regulated by the board. So if we say that the practice of telemedicine, or veterinary medicine through telemedicine is veterinary medicine, then it still needs to be done through a facility registered through the board. And then we said, well, what about someone in their living room? We added this other clause that said, or by licensees identified as being affiliated with such facilities pursuant to 309, which is the register of veterinary facilities. So you either have to be from within or out of a veterinary facility that's registered with the board, or you have to be affiliated. The reason we did that is because the concern for pill mills. So, you know, that's the biggest concern. If you talk to AVMA, their concern is pill mills. And we said, well, let's make sure, and also the concern of how you do follow-up care. By making them be affiliated with brick and mortar within that license, or within that state, or they're operating out of a brick and mortar, then that kind of makes follow-up easier, and it reduces the likelihood of a pill mill company. So these are the concerns that we were answering to. And then again, we were redundant. We said telemedicine is a practice of veterinary medicine and is subject to the same standard of practice as regular medicine. 309, just for your reference, in case you wanted to see it, that is our facility registration. So that's what we have in the PAM. Okay? And I know you guys register for facilities as well. Then we created these model regulations, the establishment and maintenance of a VCPR, and telehealth and virtual practice of veterinary medicine, and you had both of those. When you look at them, they are shockingly short. The reason why is because once we say that telemedicine is just a mode or method of practice, and you're subject to the exact same standards, then you can eliminate a lot of extra words. So we had everything written out, and then as soon as we made that clear that it's the same, we were able to just cross a lot of words out. So in the telehealth and virtual practice, we have the definitions that I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with, telehealth, telemedicine, teletriage. We did update the definition of teletriage from what we had previously. My background is emergency medicine, so I'm a stickler for the definition of triage. And so it's the timely and virtual assessment in order to tell this person if they need to go see a veterinarian or if they can be treated at home. And then truly it is just stating that there are federal and state laws that may prohibit prescriptions. We remove general advice and teletriage from a VCPR, and then we refer back to the 301 and 309 in the PAM. And then in the establishment and maintenance of a virtual VCPR, we again say the patient is in a state where the VCPR is established. So that goes back to what we have in here. Again, it's redundant, but we say that the veterinarian may only establish a virtual VCPR if they can, if the client can find timely in-person care, and if they are informed of the limitations of telemedicine. And they're provided with the license number for the licensee, you know, all that stuff that you usually see on the wall. So I don't know if this is helpful, but I, you know, as you kind of walk through the process, it's you know, again, I'm out of breaks. I'm happy to answer questions if you may have them. So I'm sorry I wasn't able to provide disciplinary data. The good news is that there's not that much, like I said.
Is there any bits and pieces you can share about the case? Because I remember when I was at the North Carolina AABSB, as you guys had mentioned, I don't know if that was you necessarily, but that there had been a couple of cases. So can you share with us even just like what was the patient calling for? What were they asking for? What was what was the hiccup then when they didn't get what they, you know?
I think a lot of them have been client communication. There was this one case where a patient was calling saying their cat was in pain, couldn't find the cat, so the doctor never saw them on video.
Okay.
And they got substance, the controlled substances from that. Turns out the person never had a cat.
Right. Okay.
So, I think in your statute that might be taken care of because you require a video conference.
Well, and you can't get controlled substances, I thought.
That as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Other concerns have been, prescribing a large amount of medications.
Okay.
Apoquil for an itching dog that ended up having fleas, for example. And just kind of over-prescribing for a condition that has not been adequately diagnosed.
Okay.
But I would refer that to, was that standard of practice to diagnose an allergy without being able to investigate for fleas or something like that.
Right.
So, again, it can all go back to standard of practice, medical record keeping, high communication.
What would you say are a lot of, so people do know that as far as the people that are using telehealth, what are the most popular kind of calls? Like what are pet parents using telehealth for?
I do not have that.
Okay, sorry.
I wish I did. I don't know if anyone's actually tracking that, but that's an interesting question to ask.
I know some of the telemed companies say that they're doing a lot of behavior cases because it's actually sometimes better to see the pet in their home environments, not stressed out from being at a clinic to address a behavioral issue. So I think behavior was a big one. I think some skin and derm cases is another one that I hear are being used pretty regularly for telemed. I know I spoke with somebody from Virginia, and they've always had telemed, apparently. I didn't know that. Or they've always done it somehow. And they said that they haven't really had any issues. My concern when I was talking with them is, like, if you've never done this before as a state, how do you start to establish a standard of care? Because we have a lot of good, healthy debate amongst ourselves on what is the standard of care just in normal practice.
Yeah.
And I think the way we come to this good debate is we do, well, this is what I do, this is what I think is right, this is what I do. But if none of us have ever practiced virtually, how do you start to establish this standard of care and know when you see a case, is it falling below the standard of care or not? I don't know how to do that. I've never done it before.
So my advice to you would be, you've never practiced virtually, neither have I, frankly, but you have practiced in person, and you know what things you can diagnose based on history and just staring at the animal, because that's all you get, right? So can you diagnose tapeworms visually? I think I probably could. And, do you see flea dirt? That could be a vision. That's an example of something. But you also, from your experience, you also know the things that you would not be able to diagnose just based on their visual exam or a history. And you know when you would need to recommend diagnostics like blood work or x-rays, right? There's no difference between that and this. If you beholden licensees to the same standard of practice, then the licensee, if they don't feel like they can make a diagnosis or an adequate enough diagnosis, presumptive diagnosis, based on visual exam and a history, then they are beholden to recommend additional diagnostics, just like anybody would be in an exam room.
Right. And referring to a specialist, so you need to go see.
Right.
Exactly. And the same would be true then if somebody called in, right, telemed, and they couldn't get to a private practice, and the client declined referral to an in-person practice. Yeah. So the telemed doctor makes a recommendation for them to go in. They say, I can't do it. I can't afford it. I can't get in. I don't have a car, whatever. They're declining it just like they would decline a referral to a specialist, right? And then the telemed doctor prescribes something to see if we can, if anything works. Is that then?
Well, I think it could be a problem. I mean, if you have a dog coughing and you are like, well, they don't want to go in for x-rays and you give an antibiotic hoping it's an upper respiratory tract infection, they die of congestive heart failure. I think that's on the vet. That's a failing of it.
So. But see, I don't know because see,
so,
to me,
again, I'm
like,
sorry, I started this because I was
yes.
asking questions.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, we
but I know we're now like having, I guess I would be more comfortable, maybe Mark, if we have questions like directed straight at her, is that piece okay
yeah,
versus this like discussion amongst
right, and this
ourselves?
Is clearly something that we're just going to have to find a space on an agenda
right.
to really address.
Okay.
We haven't had any cases yet.
Right.
And there just haven't been many.
Yeah.
So if you have any, you know, from you know, the perspective of...
we did have a couple, I don't want to say a hospital name, with the corporate hospitals, I swear we had like a possible potential telemedicine case.
We had one where the recheck was done
was
via telemed.
Yeah, I can't remember what happened with that.
And it was a corporate practice.
Wasn't it out of state?
Yeah.
It was out of state.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if we have any questions
okay.
you know,
yeah.
from a national kind of perspective.
Yeah.
But that's what it's on the agenda for.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
As you know, we do regulate premises, facilities, but it's really focused on bricks and mortar mobile practices. It's not addressing at all the big telehealth companies. Do you see other states finding a way to put a lasso around the big telehealth companies so that they even know who they are? Because now we don't have any way to know, because we do have licensees who work for those big companies, but we don't have any way to capture that.
That's an interesting, in my head I'm going through the practice acts of health fund in New York. I don't know if they put in any language on that. I don't think so. Okay. But it goes back to if you practice in this state, then
if you're licensed to practice in the state, yeah.
Yeah, and kind of a question around that. So you talked about, like I said, the facility being licensed and not the individual doctor, is that
right.
correct?
We believe, no, both would have to. So both the license, the facility would have to be registered and located in Arizona, and the licensee would have to be licensed in Arizona.
So we're not doing any kind of cross-state stuff at this
right.
point. Because my major concern is going to be, I don't know if this is a question or not, but we all know what's going to happen is it's going to have a facility registered and they're going to outfarm it to
right.
another country and have them just do a phone call. So has that been addressed? Because that's where the future is in telemedicine.
So again, it's we address it in the PAM saying that if the patient is in Arizona, then the veterinary needs to have a license in Arizona.
Okay. So we're not doing, so you guys haven't addressed cross-state compact stuff then?
We have not. And we actually talked, this was a large conversation, and that's when we said, screw it, we're going to make it, we don't have to make this easy.
Yeah.
We just have to make it disciplinable if something goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody was in India, to name a country,
mm-hmm.
Or Germany, or Britain, or whatever, and they practiced telemedicine on someone who is located in Arizona, well, not only would they have to have they would have to adhere to your requirements for a veterinarian in this, you know, they'd have to come from an AVMA accredited school, they would have to have passed an ABLE, but they would also need to have a license in Arizona, according to what we developed.
So as long as they got a license in Arizona, they could go back to another place, or go back to Vermont and kind of, you have your license in Arizona, you can still have cross-state lines that way, or does that introduce anything weird in your opinion?
In my mind, that's no different than a traveling doctor.
Yeah.
You know,
as long as you're licensed. Okay. Cool, thank you.
Well, thank you again for joining us today. We really appreciate it. And this will be an interesting, thing in the future to see kind of what, how it goes and what we experience. But we're not there as far as any complaints yet. So I hope that's a good thing. So
what I can do is ask our vault team or Diva team if they come across any telemedicine complaints, that can ask them to start compiling them.
Okay.
And, anonymize it, but we can, gather a report and see if that would be helpful.
Yeah, I think everybody would probably find that information helpful, just to kind of see, we know what kind of complaints we see and hear a lot, just in person practice. But this is a little bit different. I think it will be helpful and interesting. And, maybe for anybody even that's considering, being a telemedicine doc, might be in this room, it's, these are the things to think about and, be on the lookout for. So,
thank you, Beth.
You fly back today or tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
All right. Well, enjoy Arizona.
Nice out, yeah. Now we can go outside and enjoy our weather. So, okay. So circling back, we are done with all of our IARs in section two. So we're just going to go back to section number four, administrative review of previous actions. We are on 2362, regards to Lorna Landman, BBM, board may review, discuss, and take action on update related to compliance with board order and suspension status. This was in your supplement one, and Victoria is going to give us an update on this one.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is just an informational item. Dr. Landman's license is still in probation status. The reason I wanted to just kind of give you a little update, because some things happened in the background to just make you aware of, and I need to find my document here before I say that. So just to kind of refresh, this order was actually effective in early January. We agreed to a stay of suspension because they were going to appeal it. Then on February 5th, her attorney notified us that she decided that she was not going to appeal the order any further, and that she intended to comply. The email said that she'd like to know if it was possible to stipulate that the 30-day suspension will begin March 1st to avoid disrupting the patients who are already scheduled for services surgeries this month. I agreed to that because that seemed like a reasonable thing to do. It was a couple weeks later that I learned that she left working at that hospital and as of the end of February. So essentially the suspension was not going to mean anything because she wasn't working.
Right.
And that's what she chose to do. But I just wanted to make you aware of that, because it wasn't what the board, I believe that the board understood would occur as part of that whole case. So I just wanted to explain that, why I made the decision I did, just because based on the, to avoid disrupting patients, was that piece of it.
Sure.
Then just the other thing, she did, as required, take and pass the state exam in the time frame, and she paid a partial part of the civil penalty that's due, but her civil penalty is not due till the, through the end of the year, so that's fine. But she is making progress on that, so that's what I wanted to share.
Hmm.
Thank you.
Okay,
so
did she update where she's at?
Through her attorney, it's my understanding
Lisa's here.
I have information. It's like
that she's going to do mobile practice. She's going to open a mobile practice. However, if she had intended to do that all along and we start doing that, she would have planned ahead and have a premise license application ready to go. Sure, if you have new information.
I do have just a little bit of information.
The story changes a lot.
Yeah. Thank you. So I, just to be very clear, my understanding is that her contract with, it was Western Vet Corporation, I believe, was naturally concluding. She let me know that it actually did not officially end until April 9th. So that was when she had been booked out for, and then was, so I, there was no intentional sneakiness to it, and actually I was not involved in the understanding of whether or not she was
her employment decisions. She is planning on trying to get a premise license. It was not her original plan to do that. I think she had planned on going just somewhere else. And in case anybody's wondering whether or not, but the suspension is still impacting her. She is actually prevented from doing some of the federal relief work that she likes to do while she's on suspended status. So I just wanted to clarify that her contract was ending. It actually ends in April. This is just how she had booked herself. And I apologize if that didn't, if that wasn't as forthright as you would appreciate it.
Am I misremembering this one? I thought she was heading in the direction of retirement. Or am I confusing it with someone else?
You're not confusing it.
Okay.
So she has changed her plan a couple of times during the course of this case. She was originally planning to retire, and then I understand that Western Vet declined to renew her contract, and then that was not going to happen, and then she was going to keep going, and then they declined to renew her contract, I believe, because of board matters. And then they just decided to part ways.
Okay.
So that's my sense. Muddled understanding.
Now she's going to maybe carry on in a mobile.
She has a second suspension that's starting soon.
So she has two back to backs, I understand.
Yeah. They'll overlap. So.
Okay. And then I did advise her about the timing for the application for the premises license.
Okay. All right, well, do we have to?
No
action?
Okay. Just information.
Great. Thank you, Lisa. Next up, 23-140 in regards to Ivory Wildflower DBM. Board may review, discuss, and take action on continuing education completed in compliance with consent agreement and may return license to active status. she has paid her civil penalty. I think I saw that she took even a few hours more than what was actually required. So unless anybody saw anything different, I would make a motion that we return Dr. Wildflower's license to active status.
Victoria, was I recused from this one also?
I was wondering that. Do they have to both be since they're, can they vote on it, Mark, since they're recused from other items regarding Dr. Wildflower? Okay, so just you two don't vote. Okay. So I made a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second to return to active status. All those in favor, and again, for the record, stating that Dr. Thompson and Dr. Wright are recused from this item. So all those in favor, say aye.
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 Who was the second?
Sorry?
Who was the second?
Dr. Wright and Dr. Thompson.
No.
I was the second.
Oh, the second. Sorry, if I meant the second person that was recused.
Yeah.
It's getting long day. Okay. So now we are on to section number 5, item number 2. Board may review, discuss, and take action on request from the San Diego Veterinary Medical Association to approve the 2024 Spring Veterinary Conference for Continuing Education Credit for licensee and certificate holders. They met the requirement to submit in time, and it looks like a really interesting, great conference, obviously, if you're...
And it all had all the information on the speakers and the topics.
Like,
so I'll make a motion to approve.
Great.
Second.
Motion and second to approve. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Next is board may review, discuss, and take action on approval of agreement with the International Council for Veterinary Assessment related to the development and administration of the North American Veterinary License Examination, Natalie, for the period of May 1st. 2024 to April 30th, 2027. Victoria?
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is nothing unusual that we agree to with the ICVA. The main purpose, it's not requiring us to do anything particularly. It's just saying that we're basically delegating to them and approving them that they're going to directly approve candidates to sit for the NAVLE. Years ago, even before me, the board would approve candidates for the NAVLE, but they saw the light that this other organization could do that. It, just like we've done with CBTs now, there's no reason for them to come to us before they've taken past this national exam.
Okay.
So this agreement is just a 3-year agreement that I would sign on behalf of the board if the board approves.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to approve the agreement.
Second.
Okay, a motion and a second to approve this agreement. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Next up, number 4, board may review, discuss, and take action on information received regarding Jenica Bergsma and her affiliation with Lantanes, possible unlicensed practitioner. Victoria, can you help? So obviously most of us, we all know Landon Ames. However, I had forgotten the relationship with Dr. Bergsma. So would you just refresh? Maybe everybody else remembers it, but I didn't remember that they had worked together once upon a time. I remember the older gentleman from the very beginning. So
And I apologize, I don't remember what year it was. It's been several years ago now. That we had information that Mr. Ames was selling medication. Of course, he's not a veterinarian. And somehow we got information that it had come from Dr. Bergsma, and she indicated that she had given it to him for his horse, and then he turned around and sold it. But there, at the time, there was the belief that she was aware of what he was
doing. Right. Okay. Because again, I thought maybe she was somehow sort of oblivious to his issues with our board, but that
is not the case.
She did, however, decline any. She did not respond when we sent her the most recent, I guess, letter or call. So.
And he is still not dental licensed.
Nope. So.
So could we deal with a C case and a case against the veterinarian? Is that kind of the options, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would make a motion to open a non-licensed or unlicensed practitioner case against Landon Ames.
But,
okay. Oh, did you have a comment?
About her.
Oh, yeah.
That's another
one. I mean,
that's just my second motion.
Okay.
That's the first
one, too. Case against her.
Okay.
Yeah, so
thank you.
So, yeah, motion on Landon Ames for an unlicensed practitioner at this point.
Okay. A motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
And I make a motion to open a case against Dr. Jenica Bergsma for facilitating an unlicensed practitioner.
Great.
Sure.
Okay. Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Next up, board may review, discuss, and take action on possible unlicensed practitioner, Gwen Ware of Puppy Love Adoption Center. I don't know if everybody had the chance to read this. So my question, I guess, was, so obviously it all kind of centers around this, you know, this respiratory issue and then this bottle of pills, you know, counting out, you know, these pills without any sort of, you know, diagnosis or anything. However, this is a rescue, and the way they kind of write their, you know, contracts initially, especially this was like in the first 2 weeks of, you know, who's actually still an owner of the animal at this juncture. So I'm just wondering, I mean, certainly I see glaring issues here, but I was just wondering from everybody else's perspective whether, you know, again, with what do we, you know, do we have jurisdiction over this? This was their, from everything I thought I saw, it was their, still their sort of their owned animal, if you will. And then, you know, we don't know, these pills are, you know.
Well, I have a concern that they're getting the medications from a veterinarian and dispensing them without that veterinarian actually being involved. So it's still a person doing it there.
Know.
I still have concerns on this. I don't think this is contract or not. I think this is a whole different animal there.
And I'm not sure I understood in the contract that they were still stating it was their animal. They had this 14-day guarantee of the health, but not that it was still their animal.
And they're not paying for the medical bills in those 14 days, so they're clearly saying, I'm not the owner, I'm not paying for it.
So, gotcha. Yeah, so they're dispensing medications as
going on down. Yeah.
Yeah. So, would it be against Gwen Ware would be a unlicensed practitioner case then, correct? It's not the rescue itself. So I make a motion to open up an unlicensed practitioner case against Gwen Ware of Puppy Love Animal Rescue.
Second. Okay. Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. The next one, board may review, discuss, and take action on possible unlicensed practitioner Michelle Donahue and possible pet cremation activity at Misfit Ranch. This one was just rather horrifying. And shocking that they show the photos to advertise their business. Like, that would encourage me to bring my you know, my pet, where they throw it in a barrel in a hole in the desert or something. So, I, you know, they obviously are not a registered pet crematorium, correct, Victoria?
Right.
So, I mean.
No, that's not an unlicensed practitioner. That's an unlicensed crematorium. Or what's the option?
Unlicensed premise?
Unlicensed animal crematorium.
Okay. So, yeah, I make a motion to open up an unlicensed animal crematory case against Misfit Ranch.
Second.
Okay, motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Next one, number 7, board may review, discuss, and take action on possible unlicensed practitioners, Ryan and Joanna, DBA Bougie Paws Dental. So this one was kind of weird to me. It was it was just the two of them, but then something I saw in one of their literature or something was like, oh no, we are working with licensed vets, which, you know, again, I would like to know who they are then. So if they can provide, you know, who they're working directly with, then perhaps.
And they need a premise.
And they need, right, exactly. So I think.
So we need to open a case?
So this is, we know the name is Ryan Godspeed or Ryan White, because the other one is
Ryan Good Teeth White. Or
I think it's Ryan White Teeth.
Yeah,
right.
Is what's
right.
Yeah.
So I would make a motion, and there's also Joanna, but do we only have against Ryan White at this point, or do we have enough for both possibly?
Well, I think they're both listed on the Corporation right. Commission.
So I'll make a motion initially to open up a unlicensed practitioner case against Ryan Godspeed or Ryan White or whatever name is actually the legal name.
Second. Motion and a second to open another case. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
And I'll make a motion to open up a unlicensed practitioner case against Joanna, I assume Godspeed or White or whichever the legal name is.
Okay.
Got it.
Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Board may review, discuss, and take action on possible unlicensed practitioners, the Affordable Pet Labs. I mean, again, as Victoria and I were discussing, the understanding is that while we don't regulate the labs itself, but still these people are drawing blood, obviously off site, not at a premise.
Now, on this one, there's not an actual name of someone that we have, so would we just direct it to?
Is there anything?
I don't remember seeing a name or anything.
Well, they have had on veterinary phone call,
and that was the cheapest thing. That was so fast.
We can always call them.
So we could open up a unlicensed premise against Affordable Pet Labs, and then when we get information, we can kind of go from there. I mean, if they're using technicians and they're using CBTs, that's going to be a problem too. So.
But it has to be a person, right, Mark?
They must have like a corporation commission name, wouldn't they? Statutory agents?
We direct staff to.
Yeah, maybe Tracy has information.
Okay.
You know, that we don't know.
So can we open a case now, or does that be next month?
I'll defer to Victoria, but maybe we can wait till next month.
Okay.
Is there any reason a technician can't pull blood?
Well, if they're, again, practicing medicine, that's the question there. Is just drawing blood in someone's home considering
it's
practicing
it's
medicine?
It's veterinary medicine. Yeah. They don't have any supervision.
They're getting paid to do it.
They don't have a premise license.
So they're out there providing a service to the public. And is that medicine?
To me, it's a technician skill, unless they're diagnosing something.
Well,
or prescribing.
But a certified technician is only certified. They're not licensed. They can't work independently with a veterinarian.
Yeah,
they're not doing veterinary medicine.
That has a premise.
I don't consider pulling blood veterinary medicine. I consider however you're interpreting those tests and the treatment you're providing based on those tests veterinary medicine.
So what happens when they lacerate a vessel or something?
I don't know.
So is this one where we can have Tracy reach out, though, for more information?
See if we can get a name.
Yeah.
So I'll make a motion to direct staff to try and find a name for Affordable Pet Labs to serve.
Okay.
Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Next up, number 9, board may review, discuss, and take action on veterinary technician certification applications. Lauren Schwab, Ms. Sullivan, you are the lead.
Yes, there was a DUI from 2017, and the applicant